Hello and welcome to The Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Darlene Wagner, who is one of the producers of The Face of Pro-Life. Thank you for joining me today, Darlene. I thought we could talk about an experience that you had with an end-of-life issue that you weren't prepared for, despite the fact that you've been, pro-life for many, 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 many years. You know all of the issues, and yet you weren't expected you didn't expect the problems that you were going to have or the situation you were going to put in with specifically your mother-in-law. Could you tell us a little bit about what happened to you and her situation?
Well, when she became seriously ill after she went to the hospital for a relatively small problem, and I believe we did a show, and in that I had discussed the fact that when she went to the hospital, she had a swallowing problem that turned into a major problem where they refused to feed her, and that in refusing to feed her, she would die of starvation. And so we had a feeding tube put in her, a G-tube put in for her to receive food. At that time, we had a fairly contentious relationship at the hospital because they didn't seem to want to put a feeding tube into a 92-year-old
despite the fact that you only went in for a little coughing problem. She wasn't end stage anything.
No, she had all her organs were functioning properly, but she obviously was having problems with having food going into her lungs. Mm-hmm. It was small at that time. They made the decision that they would refuse to feed her, and so we had the feeding tube put in. But we knew that that would sustain her life.
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of the 7 days, we went through a terrible ordeal. But all I felt was if we could just get her home, mm-hmm. she would be better cared for.
Sure.
And I knew it was going to be difficult. I had cared for people on G-tubes before. I had cared for people who died at home. I've been there when many people have died. I thought, I can do this. Now, the doctors didn't want me to send her home, and the nurses didn't think that I could handle it either.
Mm.
And I said, I've done this before. But what I didn't realize is that things had dramatically changed
mm-hmm.
in the last 20 years in terms of services that you would receive when you take someone home who's seriously ill.
And let's talk about the differences. say 20 years ago, what services would you have received?
20 years ago, if you had somebody who was critically ill, who couldn't walk, who couldn't feed themselves, they would receive a substantial amount of hours, Medicare hours, that the government would pay for.
Mm-hmm.
You could get 4, sometimes 6 hours in terms of Medicare help. You would get a nurse, you would get home health aides, and it would, regardless of what the amount of money you had in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a millionaire, and you'd still receive 6 hours of Medicare money. I was on cases at times that where they had bankers that were still getting, they were getting 24-hour care, and 6 hours of it you would write off as Medicare hours.
Okay, so 6 hours a day.
A day.
Wow.
Which is when you're in a an exhausting caregiving position.
Sure.
6 hours is a lot.
Right.
It's relief time. It's time for you to compose yourself, for you to go shopping, go to church, have your hair done.
Right.
Or get a haircut if you're a guy. Mm-hmm. It's just time for you to feel yourself, to be able for you to put it back together.
Right.
But I was to find out that none of that was available to us.
Some 20 years later. So you took her home.
I took her home.
And you were on your own.
Mm-hmm. That's about the size of it. They had a bath aide that they would send in for 1 hour every third day.
Ew.
For 1 hour. And I had someone who was on a feeding pump, complete care, they would send, and they will send. I shouldn't say they would. They will send to other people. They will send a physical therapist to come in to observe whether or not you can walk, and to tell you which is the best way to approach the problem if you can walk, or if you can't walk, to determine that you won't walk and that it's dangerous to get you up. And that would cause that at that point they would decide that they won't continue to come in, and they just won't come in to give range of motion. They just won't come in to assess you at any time that if there was even hope that you'd walk again. They just sort of drop you.
So what's the point? What's different between now and 20 years ago as far as philosophy? I mean, it seems to me it would be much cheaper to send somebody to the home, you know, for a couple of hours, than to have 24-hour care given in a public facility.
Well, it sounds reasonable, doesn't it? But that's obviously not the way that they're thinking in Washington. And I'm not even sure, I asked a few of the agencies and the nurses, when exactly did these changes take place? Because I wasn't even aware. I was working for some time in those programs, but then I switched over to other programs that had different age groups of people. So I no longer were working exclusively with elderly people. Mm-hmm. So at some point, Medicare decided that they were not going to give assistance to homebound people, that they were not in the caregiving business. They could only help if someone would get better. In fact, they will give care for someone who's going to improve themselves in walking for, let's say, 12 weeks, but they won't give care to somebody who can't walk at all. But the person who can't walk at all
is
still
the one who needs the most help.
Yes, because the longer you don't use it, you lose it, and your organs break down and your body becomes rigid.
And somebody who can walk can do more for themselves, so the caregiver doesn't, it's not as big a burden on the caregiver to, have to be there 24 hours a day if somebody's bedridden and somebody has to be there with them.
There is absolutely no concern whatsoever for the caregiver. The caregiver, their emotions, their stresses, the stress level is never a consideration. You can receive services if you're willing to pay for services. Now, it doesn't mean you can't. You know, if you have the money and you want to pay $35 an hour for a home health aide, and you want to pay $125 to $138 for a nurse, Medicare probably will pay for the nurse to come in. And again, the bath aide will come once every three days to give a bath.
And yeah, that's the thing. I know that you say that, and I was in the house when my husband's grandfather received the social worker who came in, and you're absolutely right. They were so concerned. Well, we'll send somebody to give you a bath. We'll send somebody to give you. Now, that has to be the most undignified, you know, having a stranger come in and give you a bath. You know, his grandson was more than willing to do that, but nobody would come to, you know, just sit with him, or, you know, just make sure he gets his meals, you know, like just something, like you said, to give the caregiver a break.
At one time, the caregiver was considered that when a person came in for those 4 hours, they knew that they were giving the caregiver a break. Maybe the caregiver even had to go to work.
Right.
You know, for 4 hours, or maybe they for 4 hours, someone else came in who they paid. But monetarily, that's a big relief off of the stress of caring for someone in your home. $25 an hour becomes very expensive over the course of the week.
And how long did you have your mother in that home?
A year and a half.
And that is a long time. I mean, that is very costly. Had you put her in a nursing home, which would cost the state much more, well, she wouldn't have lasted as long.
Well, there's another provision there. They'll take all your money. If there's any money in the bank, you have to identify all your
assets
before they'll even put you into any programs. And when you've exhausted all those assets, maybe save a few thousand dollars, then they will begin to help you. So we couldn't even be helped until we exhausted all her money. And or if we were helped, we would be billed. They would give us that 1 hour of that home health aid, but we would, if we asked for additional help, we would be billed for it. And at caregiving prices of an agency at $35 an hour, the money can go really fast. Whereas you privately hire somebody at maybe, you know, I feel that you have to pay for good help, so I would never pay $10 an hour. I mean, I overpaid, but I believed that a home health aide should have been receiving at least from $12 to $14 an hour, depending on their skill level. The agencies pay their home health aides, I think, somewhere in the area between $10 and $14. It depends on their seniority or their experience. But they're, as an agency, they charge, whether they're public or otherwise private, charge sometimes up to $35 an hour for that home health aide. So we were caught in a, you know, between a rock and a hard place. So I was doing the majority of the caregiving. And by the time she would really need hospice, when it was indicated that she wasn't going to rally back.
Right.
That opened a whole another problem.
So tell us a little bit about that. So you had her at home for about a year and a half, and it was a heroic task to take care of her for 24 hours a day, and making sure she was fed and bathed and et cetera. What happened near the end? You mentioned hospice.
She was particularly... she was in good spirits, but she was very loud. So sometimes she was up all night, and she was very exhausting to take care of. But we stuck it through. We didn't put her in the nursing home. A lot of people said, you know, you can put her in the nursing home because she's up 24 hours a day sometimes. We went through all this trying to make her mellow out, but we didn't want to give her too much because we knew that would take her sooner.
Hasten her
death. So when she had pneumonia again, hospice at that time at the hospital came in, and we thought, well, you know, her time's coming near that she might die, and I'm really, you know, I'm exhausted from her care, and she's up a lot at night. So maybe it's time for us to go to hospice. And so the hospice nurse came out, and we discussed the hospice program. And there were certain contingencies in order for her to be in hospice. One, she had to die, they felt, had to be, some doctor had to certify that she might die within 6 months. So if she was healthier than... she couldn't last, if she could last more than
six months,
she couldn't be part of the hospice program. And so we weren't quite sure, because some days she perked right up.
Right.
Because she had pneumonia at different times. Sometimes it would diminish and sometimes it would increase. Being on the feeding pump, that's what aggravated the aspiration pneumonia. So I didn't want to say that she was going to die in 6 months. I didn't want to, you know, I wanted her to stay around as long as possible to rally back.
You know, and we don't know. You know, this is the whole thing. You are trying to let God's will be done. Who knows what God's will is? It's 6 months, a year. I mean, it's kind of ludicrous to say, oh, yeah, 6 months is a deadline. You have to go or what?
Or they'll take you off the hospice program. Even though you might not have more than 3 months left, because maybe you had a total of 9 months. The second provision was that we couldn't go back to the emergency room.
Oh, even if the person was going to be living six more months, up to six more months, and they needed the emergency room for many things, anything, you know, like if she got pneumonia again, you know, you get the care for that, you would not be able to take her to the emergency room.
No, otherwise she'd be dropped from the program. The third provision was that she would not have IV antibiotics at home. She was not to have IV antibiotics at home. I repeat myself there.
Say it's to be in the hospice program.
To be in the hospice program, she could not receive.
Why?
Because
that would extend her life?
Extend her life. You would be fighting the death the purpose of being in hospice was to die.
What is it, like an elephant graveyard? Where people just go to hide out?
Those are the same emotions that I had. So I chose not to go to full hospice. So they said, okay, then you can be in palliative care rather than the full hospice, which would have given me 24-hour nursing care, and Medicare would have paid for it.
Oh, really?
And I would have received supportive assistance. Mm-hmm. In other words, I could literally go somewhere and do, you know,
right.
I could relax a little
this
bit.
This hospice is very much for the caregiver.
It
not so
worked.
Much for the caree.
Right. It relieves the family of the burden of the 24-hour care that they've been doing.
And so what were they going to give you? They were going to, you said palliative care at home or in the hospice facility?
They didn't suggest the hospice facility.
So
we were set up for home care, and we were well prepared for home care. We'd taken care of her for a year and a half, and she had anything that we could have done for her, we were doing for mm-hmm. her. And the staff was very impressed with our setup, but we didn't have, you know. The problem was is that they weren't going to give us that much care. Even mm-hmm. in palliative care, we were going to get a home health aide. Let's see, the maximum would be 3 times a week.
Oh.
You know, maybe.
Which was better than you were getting.
Yes.
But still, it's really not.
Mm-hmm. It had increased somewhat.
Right.
And I was optimistic about that. And I knew that we would eventually go into the full hospice.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, as the story comes to the end, Eloise passes away.
Before you get the palliative care?
Well, we started the palliative care only 2 weeks.
Okay.
So,
that's kind of suspicious.
Yes. In 2 weeks, she passes away in her sleep,
mm-hmm.
which is a natural death.
Right.
She had pneumonia from the hospital. She was continuing to have pneumonia. We were fighting pneumonia. She was on antibiotics, but we didn't take her back to the hospital again, even though they had said, we really don't want to see you back here.
Right.
And if you go into hospice, you won't come back here. And I was saying, well, I don't want to go into hospice if I can't go back there. But then on the other hand, I was saying, am I going to send her back to the hospital to die? And I don't
right.
want her to die
right.
at the hospital.
Right.
I want her to die at home.
Right.
And I want her, and I know that she'll be getting better care at home.
Right.
If only I could get a little more help. But I did have some help, and I wasn't unhappy about that. But meanwhile, Eloise passes away, and that is another eye opener. That the night, because I thought we had it all covered, that when she would pass away, we would have the hospice nurse come out and pronounce her. And
why didn't that happen? I mean, you were in their palliative care
program, and I thought that we were almost in hospice. The only reason why we didn't go into hospice was because I wanted to take her back to the emergency room, but when the time came, I thought, well, better for her to die here because she's very sick, and her time is coming near, than to go back where there's strangers.
Right. And now you had seen her rally before by mm-hmm. taking her to the emergency room. Of course, mm-hmm. she ended up having the feeding tube because she was in the emergency mm-hmm. room to begin with. But, you know, be that as may, you'd seen her rally by going. So you didn't want to nip that, you know, take mm-hmm. that possibility away.
That's
if
right.
you could
I
really
didn't.
Have seen her rally again.
Right.
But you really
right.
didn't think that was going to happen.
They didn't. They were telling us that she was at the end.
Right, okay.
They were saying that, in fact, the night that we went into the emergency room, they told us, the doctor told me later, that he didn't think she was going to make it.
Oh.
And she rallied back, and she came home, and she was home for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then the pneumonia came back again.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, what happens
right.
with these end-stage, you know, disease of,
right.
of aspiration pneumonia. This is what takes them.
So you were all thinking, you know, she passes in the sleep. The best possible scenario,
mm-hmm.
she
Perfect
died a
death.
Peaceful death.
Right.
And here the hospice nurse was going to come and take care of everything, and mm-hmm. you were home free. What happened?
Well, it was going to be a dignified way for everybody, for Eloise and for us. I called the hospice program and told them that Eloise had passed away in the night. and could they please send a nurse to pronounce her? And I was told, you didn't sign up for full hospice. You have to call 911.
Wow.
And that sets into motion a totally different scenario.
So what happened when you called 911?
Well, I think everybody knows that when you call 911, they want to resuscitate. And at the hospital, it had been this great war going on about, do you want her resuscitated? And we were saying, well, yes. And they were saying, but you don't really want her resuscitated. And we were saying, but we don't want her to die. You know.
And here now she's dead. And now you she's don't want her resuscitated. And they're going to resuscitate
her. And they want to resuscitate her. Yes.
It's crazy.
And, yes. And she'd been gone for, I mean, it appeared as though, you know, at least 45 minutes. So, I mean, she was, no, there was no breath.
No bringing her back.
And I had to beg, after I called, you know, and they all come, and the state police came, the local police came, all the ambulance crew.
Meanwhile, all your neighbors are looking out the window. See this whole pile of emergency crew.
Well, I was feeling sort of in shock at the whole thing. And they wanted to resuscitate her. So I begged them. I begged the emergency crew. I said, the ambulance, the EMTs. I said, please, please, please don't. I said, there's no reason to do it. You're just going to, you know, disturb her body at this point. And she's not going to have a peaceful passing. And they said, well, we have to. And I said, isn't there any other way? Look, she's DNR. And she said, well, where's her orange band? I said, well, they didn't put it on her, but we talked about it, and the hospital knew she was DNR.
Right.
They had, in fact, they're the ones who convinced me that it would not be advisable to bring back a 93-year-old woman because she would not be able to survive anyway. She would, if you brought somebody back from any type of cardiac arrest or anything, mm-hmm. that you would have literally brought back somebody who would just die again in a few weeks.
Well, we're all going to die again.
Well, I'm really speaking in language that they were speaking to us, and I wasn't happy with the language that they were using, but that's exactly it. I was the one who was advocating for her, and they were the ones who were saying, why are you keeping her alive?
Yeah.
Now, she really is very sick. Why don't you just let her go? And I'm saying, well, if there's any hope at all, let's keep her alive as long as possible. As long as she's not in pain, and even if she was in pain, that would be something that we could cope with.
Right, manage it.
Meanwhile, at the time that she passes, they finally agree that they'll do it a different way, which was really kind. At this point, I guess God's grace just kicked in because they all become very understanding of mm-hmm. the situation. And so they had a EMT come out from the hospital. They were going to take her body to the hospital to pronounce her. And they had the EMT come out. And the EMT said you know, they had monitors on her, and there was she had passed, and they all gathered around, and there was a minister there who happened to be part of. He was half dressed to go to church, and he was a Lutheran minister, and
he
was part of the fire department, and they all gathered around, and they said prayers for Eloise.
Wow.
And they all talked about when their grandfather or their father had died. They all we all shared in bereavement mm-hmm. of someone who we loved, and you know who had passed. And she was peaceful. She passed, and so it worked out fine. But the problem was that hospice sort of put into motion all this problem, you know, by not, I don't think I misunderstood. I think I just was never told or explained to me that they weren't going to be there in the end for her. The other thing is there was a policeman, there were state policemen. It became a crime scene.
Yeah.
And so they posted two policemen outside the door. They had to have a supervisor from the state police come take photographs, the room and the body. And And until her body actually was removed to the, and they did call the funeral home. That mm-hmm. was very kind of them. They were all wonderful.
Right.
They all
right.
turned into a really a very, very kind and loving scene. But no one
expected
that. Yeah. It just happened because of the grace of God. When her body was left in the hearse, then the police left.
Now, is it? Do you think it's because they don't see people dying with dignity at home as much as they used to? I mean, is this?
They don't see it. It's rare. It was a rare. Evidently, we were very, very rare. But what I didn't understand is why hospice didn't follow me through. We were going independently. If you want to say independently, mm-hmm. because we didn't want to go. Remember, if we just said, we'll never go back to the emergency room, we would have had all the full support of hospice.
Right, right.
But because we wanted to take what we thought was a more thoughtful course
right.
for her, to see it through to the end.
And the least onerous on them. I mean, mm-hmm. you weren't like mm-hmm. asking them for anything but just help at the end.
That's right.
And they wouldn't even provide that because you weren't asking for more. Does that make any sense?
No, because we didn't go by their rules.
And
their rules somehow need to be questioned, because
yeah.
I'm not sure if those are the rules that should be applied to a at-home experience,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they should be more flexible
mm-hmm.
for someone.
Yeah, because like I said, you had seen her rally before.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out in the end that you really felt there was no hope that she would rally again,
mm-hmm.
and that you would let the nature take its course. But it did seem like, mm-hmm. especially if she had, you know, if the doctor said she had 6 months to live, or you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, beyond the hospice care rules, it just does seem a little burdensome to the caretaker.
What I don't really understand is why. We weren't being assisted in the death process, because hospice itself—that's
what their hope
is supposed to be. That's their philosophy. And even though they had been kind, and I had a good relationship with them, they never called to even say they were sorry that Eloise passed.
So they didn't—they didn't really treat you like a full mm-hmm. patient. They just
because we evidently just didn't fit into their program the way that they wanted us to.
So much for diversity. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing this experience with our viewers. I think people really need to learn before they need these types of situations,
mm-hmm.
you know, this service, what their options are. And we'll have to talk more.
Medicare, again. About Medicare help.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that you talk to your family and friends about the things that you've learned. And when you look in the mirror the next time, we hope you realize yours is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.